sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
White flag is out. Dario Franchitti takes the defensive line into one. Sato taking a peek.
Keep going, buddy. Yellow.
That's how the Indy 500 ended, unfortunately under yellow. But Takuma Sato sneaking just underneath of Dario Franchitti in turn one, could not hold it below the white line, a spin, and went into the wall, and Dario Franchitti becomes the winner of the Indianapolis 500. So Dario Franchitti wins the 500 only because Takuma Sato spins. We'll have some of that audio here a little bit later on for you that may have missed it a few moments ago. Steve Jones in the Sunbury Motor Studio joining us here in just a few minutes. Kevin Herr, I hope you got a chance to listen to yesterday's very special Joe Paterno in his own words. And if you did not catch that, you will be able to hear that a little bit later on via stevejonesshow.com and wkok.com. And if you don't have the ability to listen online, we will play that for you again down the road. So a couple of things to keep in mind. Busy week on the program. Talk a little hockey as the Penn State schedule has come out this week. We'll also talk a lot of baseball, too. Chris Wheeler is set to be on the program this week. All that coming up on the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK and online at WKOK.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Everybody standing, listen to the crowd. White flag is out. Dario Franchitti takes the defensive line into one. Sato taking a peek.
Keep going, buddy. Yellow.
The yellow is out. It should have waited to coming out of two. We talked about that. We talked about his patience.
That was the only bad part of the entire race. That was the only bad part. The fact that it finished under yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exciting.
And I will say this.
Dario is 3-for-3. All three wins were under yellow.
Yes. Yes. I will say this, though. This is the one thing that NASCAR does have an advantage over IndyCar. They were smart enough to do green-white checkered. And that would have been very, very interesting to watch a green-white checkered the way that Indianapolis 500 was run.
Well, the part about the number of lead changes was disingenuous.
To a point.
To what point?
To a point.
A dozen of them were Dixon and Franchitti trying to save fuel as teammates.
Yeah, but because one could have stayed behind the other a lot longer. The problem was the cars were so good in the draft that you could easily get around one another and make those trades. And in the last 50 laps, yes, that was a little bit unusual.
Disingenuous.
But the rest of the race, there were a lot of, more lead changes than ever. And as I said on Friday, I said, we'll see more, not only lead changes, but we'll see closer racing than ever for a 500. And that was some of the closest racing they've had in years.
In NASCAR, by the way, they've had fewer cautions this year than in any season.
Now, there is a stat I did not know.
Fewer cautions this season than any other season. There were only five in the 600 the other night. Five.
How many, I'll have to research this for you, how many NASCAR races actually had a caution that caused a green-white checkered? It seems like every time I watch a race, there's a green-white checkered because of a yellow at the end.
There wasn't
on Saturday.
Saturday night.
Or Sunday night, rather. Right.
Sunday night. Yeah, there wasn't. So, we're going to have Chris Wheeler on from the Phillies television network. He'll join us from New York. We'll do so out of the news at the bottom of the hour because we are contractually obligated to give Sarah Bartlett top billing.
What? No, I haven't seen the contract. I'll take your word for it.
We also have a lot of thunderstorms in our area here in State College today. A lot.
Well, when you get it, that means it's probably going to be about an hour away from us then.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also, if we desire, in the 4 o'clock hour, we may talk a little bit with Jason Donbach of the State College Spikes, the general manager, about what they're doing. Get ready for the minor league short season, which starts in Williamsport in 20 days. 20 days. until the opener in Williamsport for the New York Penn League.
You know what the best part of the New York Penn League is? The admission prices.
They're good.
I mean,
they're good.
Really. You could take, and they have all the specials that the big league clubs do, and you know it's really an affordable night out. And you don't have to drive 2.5 hours to get there.
No, you don't. And you get, and with the new draft rules, the draft will be a week from today. And I'm going to bring Jason Dombach back in a week from today. The draft is on Monday, I should say. We're going to bring him back in a week from today to talk about the draft from a minor league point of view. The new draft rules are going to stock this league up. Because you must sign by the All-Star break, the Major League Baseball All-Star break. That's a full month ahead of the old signing day, which it used to be August 15th. So it's going to be dramatically different. We hope everyone enjoyed yesterday's special. We were very pleased to put it together and bring it to you. That we aired between 3 and 5 yesterday.
I've had a few people come up to me and say, you know, I saw Joe in a whole different light, a different way than I ever saw him before, ever heard him speak before. And I think that's the way a lot of people felt when they, I know that's the way I felt when I heard it as well.
Well, it's very personal.
Right.
It was all personal. And talked about a lot of things in his life known about. Stories. How genuinely funny he is, but also I think it's probably I'd be willing to wager people have heard about John Cappelletti's speech but have not actually heard him say it, and that for the vast majority of people, the people actually heard the words said were said by Mark Singer on Something for Joey.
That's the only way I heard it.
Instead of actually hearing John. I think people haven't heard Joe at the White House with President Reagan in probably 26 years.
I love where he says we're all conservative.
No names on the back. Say we're conservative. President Reagan liked that line. Or Kerry Collins with the ball presentation at the Rose Bowl. I was sitting right there, probably 3-4 rows back. In that press conference when that happened. So it was, you get one shot at doing something like that. Right? Because there's stuff on there that, you know, some people have a little bit. I'm not sure everyone has all of that. How about that? And we're pleased to bring it to you and, knowing the clever people at our broadcast facility of champions, they'll probably pick another time to re-air it.
You will hear it again. I guarantee it.
Well, I will say that in some ways it was good for me, and in some ways it was very, very sad for me to put together. So
I can imagine that.
Can leave it at that. But I hope they enjoyed it. And I've all the questions that Kevin has submitted about the Phillies, we'll at least get one or two of them in.
Oh, good.
You submitted 34.
Well, I have a lot of questions.
Well, that's okay. When I brought it up to him, he said he had a lot of questions about you.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure.
I said, when we get to the Q&A thing, Kevin Hur asked some questions. He goes, well, I have some questions for him. Wheels is one of my favorite people. Known him for a long time. Penn State guy. Great to have him on the show. It will not be the last time he's on the show. All right. And we'll have him on at 3:35 today. From New York. They have a game with the Mets tonight. And the Phillies have averaged 5.7 runs. They've won five of their last six, and they've averaged 5.7 runs during this little stretch. So they find a little bit of offense here.
Yeah, the problem is every time they turn around, there's somebody else on the DL or threatening to go on the DL, and it's yet another pitcher.
Well, Roy Halladay. Now, he's being examined today. Nobody will know anything today. I mean, maybe before the broadcast tonight. Maybe.
Well, you know what will happen. Whatever will happen, we'll just downplay it, and about 2 days later, it'll be worse.
Well,
that's like right now, Carlos Ruiz is a strain in his hamstring, and he's listed as day-to-day. You know, the way the Phillies do with their injury reports, he's probably going to be out for 6 weeks in the next 2 days.
You're so negative. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. So now, let's do a little takeoff on the poll question that was on Philly.com. Let's do it locally, all right? Let's localize it. Let's find out what our fans here have to say. If you could keep two of the three aces, Hamels, Lee, Halliday, which combination would you keep? Okay. Hamels and Hamels, Halliday, Hamels, Lee Halliday. NASCAR blew out your Indy thing. 62% to 38%.
It did not. That's not a... No, you're looking at the wrong numbers. I have it at 58-42.
238.
Well, I'm sorry, your numbers are wrong. I have the official numbers.
Oh, well, I'm online looking at it right now. I'm sorry.
Sorry, yours are wrong.
And the name of the show is what?
I don't know. Up for discussion? Just like my contract.
If you'd like, we could bring management in. They could discuss what the name of the show is.
Just like my contract. Up for discussion.
Willing to talk about the 62-38 I see on my screen here right now? Or
Hey, I concede with a yellow flag ending the 500, that was really awful. It was such a good race, it should not have ended under a yellow. Mm-hmm. That was the worst part of it for me. I loved every second, watched every mile of that race. And for the first time, just the time just ticked away. It was great. Loved it.
I probably saw the final 110 laps. I missed the first 90.
No, by that time, Marco had crashed. By the way, dumb
pit strategy.
What are you
talking about?
Dumb pit strategy.
What are you talking about?
What am I talking about? Marco had the car to beat early in the race.
Yeah, but you said that I missed the crash. I saw the last 110 laps. He crashed with like 15 laps.
Was there 15? Was it? I thought there was more than that. I don't know. All I know is things were getting really bad after that early pit stop that basically none of the leaders took. It was just dumb pit strategy. The guy's in the lead. He's driving away from people. Why, when you don't have to pit, do you make go off strategy? That's just dumb. Marco had a few more choice words about it that they had to beep out on ABC, but he was probably as unhappy as I was at that moment.
I see.
Dumb.
And naturally, when he crashed, the words came out, the curse.
Well, no, that wasn't the curse that time. I mean, they did on TV. They said that on TV, but I did not think that. I really didn't, because they put him in the middle of the pack, having to fight his way up. The car was set up to run up front, not run out of the middle of the pack, so the wing settings were all different. He raced his way back up to about fifth, and then ended up having to push with only, as you said, a few laps remaining. I was thinking there was more than that, but I remember there was only a few laps remaining, and he had to put on a big push after that restart right before Tony Kanaan had the lead, and it just pushed too hard.
Yeah.
But it all goes back to bad pit strategy in the middle of the race. And how about Dario Franchitti? I mean, here's a guy who got tagged in the pits early in the race, ended up falling 29th in the field, and came back and won it.
28th. Johnny Rutherford, 1976.
Yes.
Starts 25th. 50 miles in, he's first. Yep. May have had the best car. Dario, if they'd gone green all the way through, Dario would have won.
I don't think so. I mean, they definitely had better mileage on the Hondas, but I honestly believe the pit strategy was the end of the race for Marco. Marco had the car The only time he had issues is after that pit strategy because he was so frustrated, he was complaining about everything at that point. He talked about a vibration, went in, had a pit, said, oh, I'm down to the cords. He wasn't even close to being down to the cords. He was just so ticked off that he was finding anything wrong with the car he could find.
Yeah, but I said if they'd raced green to the end, I still think Dario Franchitti would have won.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you meant. I thought you meant that he had the strongest car out there. I'm sorry.
At the end, I think he did.
I definitely got great gas mileage. The Hondas did very well. Although the top 10 was split down the middle, Honda and Chevy. It was such a good early in the month for Chevy, and then Honda ended up did better in race trim and in mileage.
Fans, by the way, have wondered about Roy Oswalt. The Dodgers brought him in, and he threw for them last week. So they are in the mix.
When does he go to Philadelphia?
Don't know. Don't know.
We're running out of starters in Philly.
Well, Texas is still in the lead, though, for Oswalt, the Rangers. Now, he has already worked out for the Phillies, and he's already worked out for the Red Sox.
Oh, did he work out with the Phillies?
And he's, yes, he has, and he's already worked out for the Rangers. The Dodgers brought him in last week. But most people are convinced that Oswalt is going to sign with the Texas Rangers.
Phillies did get some good news today as Worley now says the inflammation down in his right elbow, made about 30 throws from 120 feet away the last couple of days, didn't feel any pain. He may actually be able to return just as soon as possible, especially with Halliday's injury.
That can't be. That can't be. You said that that he'd be out the rest of the year. That can't be.
That's true. I did.
You said he'd be out the rest of the year and that the Phillies were disguising injuries.
Didn't
some idiot on this show say when you're retroactive on the disabled list, there's a reason for that?
There's only one difference. The season isn't over yet. Now, he could be fine now that he's only thrown just a few days. But then when he goes back into the regular rotation come July, he could start feeling it all over again.
Well, I mean, I know there's certain days you feel a twinge in your voice.
I've got nothing for that one. I've got nothing for that one.
As predicted on the show Friday, the Celtics would win Game 7 over the Sixers, but would lose Game 1 to Miami. And that came to fruition. Celtics at home had the energy to beat Philadelphia, actually did so with relative ease down the stretch, and had no juice last night. Plus 5 technical fouls. Serena Williams got knocked out today at the French Open. I got a text from Bill Amin, my good friend, who was working for ESPN and the Tennis Channel. He's in Paris. He texted me about 15 minutes ago, Serena Williams, gone.
Gone.
And she won the first set. She was in great shape. Won the first set 6-4, then lost the tiebreaker 7-6, then lost 6-3. Sharapova went 6-love, 6-love. Kevin doesn't know whether she can play tennis or not, but he watches anyway. Our number, 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. You know, you didn't need to submit the questions for the Chris Wheeler talk.
Well, I just want to make sure you had everything covered.
There are some names on here I don't know anything about, and the fact that I have to ask a question about whether your kid's going to be scattered or not, I found to be embarrassing.
I remember putting that one on there.
Come on.
I already know the answer to that one.
Says it right here. I have it right here in front of me. We're at the beautiful. It says here. It says, will Kevin's son Daniel be scouted by the Phillies and can he play for the Crosscutters this summer? I mean, I know it's you. You misspelled Crosscutter.
He could use the playing time. I'll say that.
You told me what his batting average was today.
That's right, down below a buck. Well, no, not quite below a buck, but it's right at about a buck.
He and Mario Mendoza straddling a certain line.
The line.
Wheels after Sarah Bartlett. I think the order is perfect.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and also Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Time now to talk some Phillies baseball. The Phillies have won 5 of their last 6. They're in New York at Citi Field to take on the Mets this evening. Very pleased to be joined by someone I consider to be an old friend, good friend, Chris Wheeler, joining us from New York. And Wheels, first of all, on behalf of Jack Ham, the two of us want very much for you to join us up in the broadcast booth. We always love to have friends up there, of which you absolutely qualify, and we hope you find it in your schedule to be up there with us at some point, because we'd love to have you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I will take you up on your offer sometimes. I'd love to see how you guys roll, because I sure enjoy listening to you.
Well, same here, partner. Let's talk about your baseball team, because the Phillies, over the last few games, have averaged 5.7 runs. And what are you seeing offensively in a team that has had to deal with no Ryan Howard and no Chase Utley all year?
Well, it's perked up a little bit, obviously, Stephen. Why? You know, it's hard to tell. I think the weather's hot. You know, when the weather gets hot, you hit whether you can – whether you help it or not. You know, it's just, I think when it's cold and you're struggling the way this team was, you get in a lot of games where you really don't hit all that much. Obviously, this team has a lot of offensive deficiencies, but there are enough guys on given nights that can pick it up a little bit. And, you know, like a guy like Wigginton yesterday, Mayberry every once in a while, those kind of guys, you know, that they didn't count on them that as much this year as you're having to use them, have started to pick it up a little bit. Galvis has been very, very good, a surprise at second base and able to produce some things offensively. And Carlos Ruiz has been terrific. I mean, right now he's the all-star catcher. So it's not a great offensive team, Steve Victorino, once in a while. It's gotten a little bit better, and hopefully it can keep up. We're not going to hit a lot of home runs, but hopefully we can put enough together to score runs.
Freddie Galvis is somebody that I watched start his career at Williamsport, and I was impressed with his glove, and I thought he hit well enough. What are you seeing in the major league level that tells you he's going to stick long-term with the team?
Well, first of all, instinctively, he's a baseball player, and, you know, you don't have a whole lot of that nowadays. You know, you have guys that come up too fast. They don't have a long time in the minor leagues anymore where they learn to play the game. I don't know how much they play when they're kids, and all of a sudden they're thrust into a major league situation. They don't have a lot of instincts. This guy has unbelievable instincts. Yesterday we had a play where, you know, throws coming in from right field. He cuts it off. He falls down. He takes a peek at the guy at third, throws from his butt to Rollins. They get a run down, get the out, and the guy stays at third. You know, you don't teach those kind of things. He just does them. And offensively, Stevie's been a lot better than we thought, and we'll see. But, you know, if he ever can learn to stay off high pitches, you know, which are fly balls sent to die for little guys especially, he has a chance to hit around 250. And if he could ever hit 250 consistently with his defense, he's going to be a big-time player.
Yeah, he'll be really good if he hits 250. In other words, he'll be a long-term major leaguer, because he can play all three positions outside of first base in the infield.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the day when Charlie runs him over to play third, and you know, you never know, that could happen too. The way he took the second base, though, is remarkable. You know, a shortstop spends their whole life watching everything in front of them. The double play comes at them. They never have to worry about being blindsided. And now all of a sudden he goes over to second. He's quick as a cat over there. They hardly even touch him. He has two or three different ways he's learned to get away from the bag, use the bag for protection, get in the air when he has to. I don't know. You don't have to teach him that much. He just does it, and he's so much fun to watch. And above all that, and you know what it's like when you get somebody you really like personally and you root for them, he's a great kid, and you really root for him to do well.
Absolutely. Obviously a story that people are talking about, and nobody will know the results today. He's being examined today. What about Roy Halladay?
Yeah. Well, we just like everybody who's a Phillies fan, we have our fingers crossed. We have no idea, as you said. He says it's in the back of his shoulder. Let me put it this way. If you hear terms today like no structural damage, or you don't hear the term labrum or rotator cuff or those kind of things, I think that's all good. Any of those terms, you know, to me, it sends up a red flag of potential problems for a guy who's 35 and has logged as many innings as he has. So, you know, I think we'll just wait and see like everybody else, and hopefully we'll have something for the telecast tonight. Or, you know, it'll be tweeted way before anybody really knows it. You know, everybody gets everything so far ahead of time nowadays, so we'll probably hear about it even before the club releases the. Somebody from the hospital will probably tweet it. Who knows?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
There was one point, Wheels, where when Utley, Howard, and Lee were on the disabled list, the Phillies had $58 million on the disabled
yeah.
list, which was unbelievable. Give us an idea what, and I'm gonna go away from Lee for a moment, what Cole Hamels in a contract year has meant and what the Phillies are thinking about with Cole Hamels right now.
Well, you know, sometimes guys have, I can't say it's a career year for him because this is a guy who's the most valuable player in the league championship series and the World Series. So, and then he rode in a parade down Broad Street. So that's pretty much a career year for most people, I would think. But he's having an amazing year in a walk year, you know, and players live for that. They don't get that many shots at free agency, Steve, and then when they have a big-time year like this, and there's no difference in him this year than last year, in my opinion, other than the fact that he wins games. He gets a W as opposed to a no decision. He had a lot of no decisions last year on blown saves because the bullpen was so unsettled last year, blew a ton of saves. He would get involved in a game where, you know, they tie it up after he left and he'd get the no decision even if the team won. So he's good. You know, if you put a top 10 together in this league and American League, I don't see how he's not in the top 5 in either league. He's that good right now. And what he's going to make, who knows with the markets the way they are now. I hope the Phillies can keep him and he doesn't get out on the open market, because if he does, it'd be a little bit scary, I think, what some teams would go for.
Exactly. And being left-handed, another incredible plus.
He's another guy, Steve. You know, he's a farm system kid, and he's a good guy. You know, he had the reputation. You've been down to Philadelphia enough to know, and you're a Red Sox fan and all that. But, we're tough, and, you know, I always said that baseball ends, it starts in New England and ends south of Wilmington, you know, the way people are. And it's different, very, very different. And when he first came to Philadelphia, you know, he can't help it if he's pretty. You know, it's not his fault that he looks the way he does. He's just a good-looking man. So right away they're going to test him and say he's soft and, you know, he's not one of us and he's not a Philly guy. And he's just so different than that. He's so competitive. And he's fun to watch. He used to beat himself up too much, and he's gotten his emotions under control now. He's one of my favorites. I really enjoy watching the guy compete.
Yeah, the 250-mile corridor is where the where the depth of intensity happens to be. Thus, the signing of Jonathan Papelbon. And
right.
He wasn't tendered by the Red Sox. You know, it was their fault. To have him come in there, you knew he had the mental makeup and toughness that they've been aching for in a closer.
Yeah, he's fine.
he's different too, Wheels.
he's really different. He's a perfect closer. He's like a kicker. You know, they have to be a little bit goofy, I guess. You know, that's one of those things. You know, that's just the way they are. Although I ran into Robbie Gould the other night in Chicago. He sang "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." So I went up and introduced myself to him and told him I was a Penn State guy and all that. He seemed kind of sane. I guess you would know that better than me,
you know,
for a kicker.
He's not that bad. He's not that bad for a kicker in terms of how he handles himself. I'd say on a kicker scale, he's probably a 10 on the normal. For you and me in everyday life, we'll go 7.
All right. Well, he did a great job of taking me out to the ball game. It was cold at Wrigley. I just happened to have a Penn State sweatshirt on underneath my jacket, so he got a kick out of that. But anyway, Papelbon is like kickers. You know, savers, closers are like kickers, and they're either nuts when they start or they get that way because the role makes them that way. So he arrived wacko with that Ocho, you know, that Cinco Ocho moniker, you know, that's the guy who's on the mound as opposed to Pap, the guy that got off the bus with us yesterday morning, was talking normally on the way into the clubhouse. He's not afraid, as you just alluded to, pitching in Philadelphia after being in Boston all those years. And, you know, they're not, John Vukovich used to say when he was with us, miss him so much still, but he was a tough nut, boy. And he used to say the fans, they start out, they try to crack you. And if they can, they will. If they can't, then they really love you in the end. And I think Papelbon really fits in that mold.
Yeah, no doubt. One of the things in baseball that is so important these days are the bridge guys that go from the starter to get to a Papelbon. The teams that are in it for a long time, and you know it, when they're in long-term in a season, their bridge guys usually do pretty well. They take care of the seventh and eighth. And the Phillies are number one in the majors in quality starts anyway. What do the Phillies need out of those guys right now that can bridge the gap between a quality start, which the Phillies are getting an abundance of, and then get to Papelbon, who's one of the best in the game, period?
Well, that's a great point, and Charlie Manuel is looking for it all the time, and it has not settled down yet. We hoped it was Qualls. Chad Qualls, who you know, has been in the major leagues a long time and been good and bad, and we hoped we were going to get the good, and we've kind of got the in-between. He has a tendency to throw homers, and that's certainly not good because normally you're coming in tight games and you can't get away with a home run ball. So they've gotten away from him, and he's coming a little bit earlier. They hope that a kid named Antonio Bastardo pitched a lot last year. He's starting to look a little bit better. We've got an unbelievable production out of a guy named Raul Valdez, who, you know, has been all over the major leagues and minor leagues in his career, and he's been really good lately. But can he keep it up? Contreras is starting to come back a little bit and get his arm strength back, and they trust him a little bit more. But I think you hit on a point right there that is not settled and has to be settled at some point, because when you lose those games in the seventh and eighth inning the way the Phillies did earlier this year, all of a sudden you get buried a little bit the way they were, and it takes a long time to get out of that hole they dug for themselves. That is a point right now that they have to get better at, because the ninth inning or the closer situation with Papelbon right now has been very good.
No question about that. Quick update. What about Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Vance Worley?
Well, Worley first, we think he's okay. He has a bone chip, and, you know, it's easy for me to say, but that's no big deal because these guys all have bone, you know, a lot of them have bone chips. It's just so it doesn't get into a joint lock, and then if it does, then they have to have surgery. Normally they can pitch with a bone chip, and there's some pain and maybe some discomfort during the season. Then they have it out. He just wanted to make sure there was nothing structural, just for his own head. He'd never had one of these. He's convinced of that. So in a matter of time now, he's due to start throwing. And I don't know whether he's going to have to go into rehab or not, but he should be back pretty soon. Utley and Howard are up in the air. Utley's still with us. He says he's feeling better. He's taking it to the point where he feels that he's 100% or close to it before he even starts to do baseball activities in Clearwater. So we just... You know, you can get more information out of the old Kremlin than you can get out of him. He's just, you know, he's Mr. Stoneface with his information. And as far as Ryan goes, he's in Clearwater doing quote-unquote baseball activities right now. But, Steve, you know, this is like a tight end on a torn Achilles. You know, it's a big man on a big-time injury. So we all felt it was going to take a long time for him to get back, and we'll just see. But the odds are he will play this year, but we don't know what we're going to get when we get him back.
Chris, I'll be honest with you. When I saw him go down in October, and then the next day they confirmed what it was, my thought was anything they could get out of him in 2012 would be an incredible bonus anyway. And I know everybody was waiting for him to come back, but it's almost like picking up somebody in a deal on July 31st.
I agree. My thought was the night that it happened, a few of us were sitting around, you know, looking at each other. We were so shell-shocked that night anyway after that 1-0 game. And we're looking at each other, and I remember saying, well, if you get him back after the All-Star break, it would be a good thing. And I still believe that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, what can you tell me about the new coach, about O'Brien? Can you give me something before
okay.
we leave?
Well, I'm going to give you something, sure. Number one, okay, in November, because I'm gonna get you into October here, okay? All right. How about that? You're only four games out, Wheels.
Okay? Yeah, I got you.
Okay, so when we get you here in November, and the Jack right. and I get you up in the booth, and you hang with us, okay? I don't want you hanging on the other side with DiEugenio anymore, okay?
Okay, you, yeah, you're retired on me.
Yeah, you got to come over and hang with us, okay? And I insist. Okay. You're really going to like this guy's style. I mean, he gets out there. He communicates with his team. He's great with his coaching staff. He's been great with the fans. And you're going to like what he brings to the table with the offense. And Ted Roof will run the defense. But they're going to be aggressive on both sides of the ball. He uses the entire 160-foot width of the field the way he attacks. And Wes Welker was number one in the NFL in yards after the catch. Rob Gronkowski was fourth in yards after the catch. And Aaron Hernandez was ninth in yards after the catch. Now, you and I both know it really helps, for example, when Roy Halladay's 100% and on the mound, and it really helps when Tom Brady's the one delivering the ball.
Yeah.
But he has the schemes, and I see it, that puts them into position to get the yards after the catch.
Right.
And you're going to like this a lot. And he puts a heavy emphasis on special teams, very heavy.
Well, that's great. I've been in contact a little bit with one of the new coaches, is a guy from LaSalle, John Butler. I'm sure you've gotten to know by now.
Secondary coach and also a lot in special teams. And he's a good friend of the Conlins, yep.
Right. Well, he's a major Phillies fan, too, as I found out. And, you know, it's kind of, yeah, I realize how old I am when he and I emailed each other and he told me how cool it was to talk with Wheels. And I'm thinking, man, it's nice to talk to you. So that was, I've had some correspondence back and forth with him. And boy, there seems like they're, you know, I know especially you, and you know me, I'm not trying to put down anything that happened there before, but there does seem to be a whole lot of enthusiasm and you know, a new feeling about things right now. And I can't wait to see it get started, too.
Look. You've been around change because in baseball, for example, especially in a professional level, there's a lot more change than there is on this level. Okay. They won 409 games with that particular way of going about their business, which is great. Now somebody else comes in, and while keeping certain elements, they have to go about the business in their own way and go about trying to win with the way they're comfortable with it. Right. And so yeah. That's exactly what he's doing. Each person should be allowed to have their own style when they bring to the plate, when they come into work. And that's what he's doing. He's employing his style that he's comfortable with, that he feels is going to work. And to be honest with you, the old way worked, and I really believe this way is going to work.
Well, it does sound great. I obviously am a loyal fan and alum. I look back now, and I was lucky enough as a student in 1966 to see Joe's first win, and I was at the Illinois game and saw us in person. I saw his last win. So I don't know how many people will ever be able to say that, but I'm pretty proud to be able to say that.
Well, we'll get you over here, and we'll get you up there for some of the early wins of this new era, and you're gonna enjoy it. And thanks for the time you gave us today. This won't be the last time I think we'll talk this summer, and then you and I will work out exactly when you're going to get up there with us, because we'd love to have you. Believe me, we'd love to have
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Steve. It's a pleasure speaking with you. Anytime, it'd be my pleasure. You be sure and give me a call.
Chris Wheeler, did I get to any of the questions you had?
No, you skipped them all, but that's okay. I'm used to you ignoring me.
Huh?
Exactly.
Back with more after this.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230. And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles, where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
Welcome back to the show. I always try to get as much information as we can out of Wheels. Certainly last year, Vance Worley comments to the poll, I thought.
Yeah, we'll see. Although he did concede that, you know, it's still not out of the woods yet because...
Yes, bone chips. Happens. You just can't have the bone chip get locked in
right,
a joint.
Exactly. That's the thing that I think is the big concern.
Yeah, well, he can throw. He's fine.
Listen, I'm not hoping that that's the problem. I don't want that to be the problem. You make it sound like I'm hoping for this to happen. Au contraire.
Something goes wrong, then the fan in you comes out. Meanwhile, I have to be the objective rudder on this show.
Well, at least we found something for you to do.
I have to do it often on this show to be the objective rudder as to what's going on.
And that's all right, because I'm the fan.
Yes. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. Look, if there's for Philly fans, if there's any interview to react to, it's that interview. A lot of information in that interview about Chase Utley, about Ryan Howard, about Vance Worley, about status of contract negotiations, about certain players on this team. Yeah, I didn't really get a chance to talk a little bit about Hunter Pence and what he's meant because he's been great. Or Kyle Kendrick, who's been very good of late. Joe Blanton goes tonight.
Very much a pleasant surprise with Kyle Kendrick.
Well, if you're going to win, and they're two games over 500 now, and they're four games out of first place. 42% of the teams that are in first place on Memorial Day do not win the division.
Well, you're just full of interesting stats today, aren't you?
Somebody has to walk in here prepared to at least get the populace to think.
Well, thank goodness some music saved you on that one.
Fine, I'll shut it down the next hour. We'll let you take it home, see how it goes.
It's starting to sound good. Now let me think about that a little bit during the news.
Yes, remember, never start a sentence with think.